and welcome to another instalment of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com and on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are reverberating thanks to the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. Well, it was another bad day at the office last Saturday as Sol Bamba's controversial winner condemned us to defeat in Cardiff. Add Dale Stevens' also controversial red card and subsequent pre-match ban to that, it leaves our midfield looking horribly light ahead of the visit of Leicester City next week. It looks like the international break has come at a very good time. Speaking of the international break, did anything interesting happen this week?
Nope. Yes.
Hold the front page! We've got an England international. Also this week, Glenn Murray put pen to paper to extend his stay at the Albion for another year. Will that be long enough time for him to become Albion's all-time leading goalscorer? Also, despite Aaron Connolly's hat-trick at MK Dons, the under-21s went out at the Checker Trade Trophy on Tuesday night by one goal. The form of the Irish striker has led to calls from many for him to be promoted to the first team, although the likely outcome will be a loan move in January. With the international break taking precedence this week, there are no games this weekend, but the women's team are in action at Crawley on Sunday when they face Reading. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we're delighted to welcome back Attila the stockbroker himself, Mr. John Bain.
John, how are you, mate?
I'm good.
Good to see you again. It's been a while since you've darkened the Reverb studio hallways.
Yeah, it's nice. It's always nice to... It's always nice to come back, and we've had a pretty good start of the season generally. I'm very happy. I mean, very sanguine about the whole thing, to be honest. I'm still looking back to 20 years ago and thinking we've come from there and we're here, and from Hereford to here, and we're, you know.
If only there was a poem of that name, you could have written it, John.
I could have written.
It's lovely to have you back in here. Now, last season, you normally fit your gigs around going to the Albion games. This year, you've not been so.
This year, it was quite simple, really. I mean, last year, I had to turn down, eight really good gigs because I literally had to say to promoters, right, okay. I know this sounds silly, but you know it already, most of them. You know it already. But I'm not going to be able to confirm the gig until I know whether we've got a game on Friday night, Saturday lunchtime, Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, Sunday or Monday. Because I was determined to go to every game. And I was at every away game. But obviously the Albion I love, and, you know, they're a great passion. But my life is as a poet musician, and this season I've reverted to what I normally do, which is I do everything I can to organise the gigs around the fixture list. But if they move the fixture, then that's just tough, something I'm not going to say
yes.
on Radio Reverb.
Yeah. well, this is so, something also, you know, in speaking to...
It's for everybody, this. It's for everyone.
Absolutely,
it's not just for me. It's for, you know, people with families, you know, it's like people, everybody. How are we going to deal with a 5:15 kickoff on Boxing Day when there's no trains and no buses anything? I mean, I'm fine because I cycle to all the matches, but, you know, there's not many people that do that.
If anyone is wondering how to answer that question, Seagulls Travel have extended
Looks like Seagulls Travel are only doing it as far as Shoreham, so I'd have to walk to Shoreham in order to get the bus from there.
They've got buses from Worthing, from Lancing, from everywhere.
Well, I'd hope so, because I'm going to have to look again. And it's quite expensive to do it, isn't it?
It's not too bad, but, you know, how else are you going to get there?
Well, yeah, I might just walk to Southwick and see if I can get a backy on John's bike.
Well, this is true.
It would collapse. It would
collapse.
It would. It really would.
Now, the thing is, it's interesting saying about sort of all the gigs all the matches changing all the time. This is something that in talking with the Football Sports Federation, which I've been invited to their meetings with the Premier League, and we'll talk about this later, is one of the things they're trying to do is actually to get refunds. And this is not through the Premier League, but it's actually through the train operating companies. It's trying to get, money back, then at least a consideration that if you buy an advanced train ticket and the match is changed, you know, the time of the match is changed, that particular advanced train ticket is going to be valid for when you can move it. And that's the train there and the train back. At the moment, the train companies just don't want to know. They're not interested. In talking to the Department for Transport, who don't give a monkey's.
But there are logistics involved in that as well, like seat reservations.
The thing is, they do say if... if there's capacity. I mean, for instance, the next train is fully booked, then okay, fine, forget it. But it's still a
there's
pain in the
watts. Something far, far more fundamental than that. I'm sure everybody who cares about these things has seen the recent report, which is that about half the Premier League clubs will actually make a profit, even if no one went into the stadium at all.
Mm.
It's high time that the Premier League actually compensated fans for tickets bought for games that are moved because of Sky or whatever, or BT Sport or whatever. And furthermore, in my opinion, it's high time, given the ridiculous amount of profit that they're making and the fact that we are simply now an extra, that our ticket prices were massively reduced as well. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. It's getting to the point where, you know, at some point in the future, I think it's time to start thinking about sort of basically having a one game a week where we just try and get as few people to turn up as possible for a televised match to show what happens when the fans aren't there. Because at the moment, they're saying, well, you're going to come anyway, so we can do what we want.
Well, the classic example being is that probably the furthest distance between in the Premier League at the moment is probably between Bournemouth and Newcastle. Now, admittedly, Bournemouth just don't have that many fans that would go to Newcastle. Newcastle, you know, there isn't the room up at Bournemouth Stadium anyway. So if you're going to look at it as another example, you probably think, well, either Southampton or Brighton. But, you know, but the thing is, then you've got Newcastle fans who'll have the London-based ones. If you've got a game at 5:30, you've got a 7:45 kickoff on a Monday, you know, where you have no choice. Don't get me wrong. The Brighton hoteliers would love it. But apart from that, you have no choice.
For me, it is incredibly frustrating after all the... I mean, you know, it's the one sort of downside. For all the years where we were absolutely rubbish and nearly going out of business and all the things that we've been through, I knew that our game was going to be 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon.
Mm.
And for literally since 1982, I've organised my gigs around the fixture list as much as possible. And I've got to about probably between 10 and 20 matches a season on that basis, and it works. Now it's just ridiculously difficult, impossible to actually do that. I mean, you know, it's between 10 and 20 away games organised around a fixture list where you knew that was going to happen. Last season, I just gave up. I just thought, right, I'm going to the games, and I basically had to just put everything on hold. Not doing that anymore.
Do you think then that that the edict that's been set in stone in this country that you can't televise a match at 3 o'clock on a Saturday?
That would make it worse. It really would make it worse because you'll have the lazy armchair fans. I mean, and quite right, frankly, you'll have the lazy armchair fans who can't be bothered. You think, okay, I'm going to get to watch my team for free because it's on the box, so you just go to the pub for a couple of pints or whatever it might be. You know,
I think they should do something a bit different from that. I think they should organise everything at the start of the season. Now, it's not beyond the wit of these people to actually realise that it is very, very likely that the teams that they're going to be televising the most are the ones that are going to be doing, you know,
best, yeah.
The best.
Yeah. I think they are already.
I think, I mean, that is that if we're going to accept this ridiculous procession, which the Premier League has become, Leicester accepted, then let's take to its logical conclusion in terms of the way that the television works. Okay, if you're going to have a top six, you're going to have the total domination of the game by these six clubs. Let's just set that in stone by actually, at the beginning of the season, deciding which games we're going to actually have televised so that all fans know at what time their games are going to be all the way through the season. Now, of course, that isn't going to happen. And the reason it's not going to happen is because now the big corporate television companies and the Premier League really do not care about fans at all. They really don't. Now, of course, you know, they know that most of us are going to go anyway, regardless of what happens. The ones who really care. I mean, I was there at 12:30 in Cardiff. I could have watched it on the telly. I had a free weekend. I organised it so I could go. I missed the previous three games because I got away games because I got gigs, and previous home game at Wolves because I'd got a really good festival. So I thought, right, well, I've got a free weekend this week. I'm going. And it's simple as that. You know, some people won't do that. Some people will. But the point about it is ultimately, We have somehow, and it is very, very difficult because of the money. We have got to work out a way with the Premier League where the rights of fans are respected, not just the rights of fans. That's not exactly the right expression. Where family life, people's basic existence as human beings, as working people, is still supposed to be a working people's game. Where people can combine work, family life, and supporting the teams that they love in a way which is logical. It's drawn into the most stark relief for me because I earn my living at weekends doing gigs. But it's the same for anybody. If you do a 9-to-5 job during the week and you've got a family, you have a different kind of problem, but it's at least as real as the problem that I have.
Mm.
And it's wrong. It's completely wrong. And it's insulting to us. And then when they publish the statistics which say that the clubs could exist without us, then the logic is to say, well, OK, at the very least, compensate us if you move our game to the point where a lot of people can't go because they can't get the transport. Give us the money back.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there is a stat which we've used on this show many times about Liverpool. They could really reduce their ticket price by £40 per person per match and still make the same amount of money they made.
Before. I mean, I'm sure we could actually probably do that as well.
And again, when they turn around and say, as I'm sure Paul Barber would do, well, John, that's not really. You know, that's just not how it works. Well, we could do that, but that's not how it works. Then you just say, well, it's how it works in Germany. I mean, that's the obvious thing. I mean, in Germany, they have really good fan culture, really low ticket prices, and the same restrictions with television. I mean, all the games get moved around all the time. They have the same problems as we do. In fact, it's even worse in some ways because they get moved around in the second division as well quite a lot, as I know on the few occasions I get to see St. Pauli. But they do something about it. I mean, they at least the fans get decent ticket prices, and the game is accessible to all, which it's not in this country.
That's another thing we've actually tried to put in with the Premier League is that any games that do get moved, that the away price is actually reduced, especially for a game which it's impossible to get to and back, and without actually having to drive. And this is something they're just not interested in. I think they're sort of trying to put a £10 away price cap on that. Premier League not interested. I think they're keeping the £30 away price cap. Which was due to expire at the end of this season. And as I understand, the Premier League are recommending that they do keep it because when the clubs originally signed up to it, they thought it was going to be for life, but it was going to be for good. So I think that it's a recommendation from the Premier League to the other clubs or to its member clubs, they're going to keep it. But other than that, you know, we're pushing for reduction and all sorts of things, especially for sort of like the over 18, you know, the 18 to 21s, and a lot of clubs already do that. Certainly the compensation for the fact that you can buy a cheaper rail ticket, but that's down to the railway companies. But, you know, whatever way you do it, you know, you cannot go to an away football game and get change realistic from 60 or 70 quid. Can't be done. And that's even if it's a local game.
Okay, well, let's leave that. I mean, basically what we're saying is they can do more.
Amusing, funny thing for me is I've bought the most recent ones, again, last season, when I got my Huddersfield away ticket, it refused to let me buy it. It said, you cannot buy this ticket. And I'm thinking, well, why the hell's that? Why can't I buy my ticket? I've got enough points twice over for this game. Then I saw the small print and it said seniors, £20, £10 reduction for seniors.
First game after your birthday.
It was just about the first game after my 60th birthday. So I thought, well, there's one advantage of being an old punk rocker.
You'd earned it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You'd earned your stripes, John. Yeah. But you also earned your stripes this weekend. You did go to Cardiff. I don't think the team did.
It wasn't. I mean, to be absolutely honest, it was a ridiculous. There's a few things that were ridiculous. First of all, Stephen's tackle was completely and totally ridiculous. He's done it a few times. It was indefensible. It was completely wrong.
I could mount a defence for that.
Totally deserved to be sent off. The referee was an incompetent, useless piece of lemming vomit. it was unbelievable. Every single decision, literally every single free kick. Literally every single one went to Cardiff all the way through the game.
Yes. I think they call it. Simpson.
Sol Bamba was in a different continent when he scored that. It wasn't even just offside. He was on a different planet when he scored the alleged winner, which was a winner.
He was on a different planet when Lewis Dunk scored the original goal.
Yeah, absolutely. For most of the game, this is how thin the margins are and how incompetent referees can change things.
Let's hear your defence of Dale Stephen.
Let's start a bit at the beginning before we go through the whole of my nose before we keep doing it.
We're just
pretty much.
Carry on.
You know when you get me on, it's going to be...
In deciding that John was going to be on this show, I did actually... My message to him was, rather than saying we've got a tiller on, I said, shred half your production notes because we've got a tiller on. Because the rest of it is just going to be... Carry on.
I'm just going to put all of this in the hamster cage in a minute.
Yeah,
I reckon.
Okay.
So there was changes to the team. Montoya has come back in for Bruno, and Antti Knockaert was back for the injured Jahan Bash. Lucardio was ill, so Victor Gyökeres took his place on the bench. Aaron Connolly also travelled, and shall we talk about Lucardio now? Let's talk about Lucardio.
Yeah, he's had a rant at he's another Dutch fellow who's had a rant at the local press saying I need to be respected more. I've come here, I've cost a lot of money, but I'm not getting it. And you think, well, all right, Glenn Murray might be old and smelly, and by the time he's finished with us, he's actually going to get his free bus pass and his £20 tickets to Huddersfield these days, but.
£10.
But the point is that Murray is playing the form of his life. He's playing out of his skin, and he is fundamentally undroppable at the moment. And sorry, mate, Lucardio, yes, you've got your skills, you've got your talents. I'm not sure what they are, but they have to wait for the time.
They're not in board of music, I can tell you that.
No, they're not. Really, so, no, we have played
like
that
some of his stuff.
Well, that means you've got very poor taste. Sorry. But then we are more or less from a different generation.
Is there actually, between the three of us,
I actually have similar taste to you, John. So it's kind of.
Yeah, there's. Yeah. Then how can you like that? It's worse than Crystal Palace.
It is worse than Crystal Palace.
It's worse than the reserves.
You want to smash all the windows at Crystal Palace listening
it's
to
worse,
it.
It's worse than Coldplay mixed with Crystal Palace.
Yes. Times your original.
In the Conservative Party headquarters. I mean, anyway.
It's. Can I
just say one thing about Lucardio?
Go on.
I've got a lot of friends in Holland. I do a lot of gigs over there. I got one friend particularly, a guy called Cor, who actually used to play semi-professionally for Blauwit Amsterdam. He's really clever. He's obsessed
That's
with
Kuiper's
football.
Old club.
Absolutely. When we signed, because he comments whenever there's a player that comes from Holland, he comments. Mm-hmm. And he's done with Elvis and all the rest of it. But he actually said when we signed Lucardio, he said. Very good for PSV, playing in the main against not such quality sides. He won't be any good for you. He shoots with both feet. He's tremendously energetic, but he doesn't have the skill level necessary to play at your level in the Premier League. And I was surprised that we'd spent £17 million on him, given what Cor was saying. And Cor is not somebody who takes these things lightly. He really does know his stuff. I think we have to take into consideration at the time we signed Lucardio, everybody, every sort of armchair pundit, you know, on the internet or whatever, was bemoaning the fact that we had no strikers. And I think maybe for once, and this is, it's pure speculation, maybe for once, slightly, the recruitment people were influenced by the fact that they just had to come up with a product, a result very, very quickly.
It's very rare that they get
shocking.
It wrong these days.
But it's shocking.
But the other thing is...
He doesn't look like he's got it to me. And I mean, I hate dissing players.
No.
And you give them time, and he hasn't had much time, and it's very bad luck for him, ironically.
But then you have to consider the games that he's played. But then you consider the games he's played, and he played up front on his own against Manchester City, and frankly...
Played up front on his own against Liverpool the last game of the season last year.
Well, what's the point, you know? So you can't. It's totally unfair to judge him on that.
These are both games that we were in a hiding to nothing. And
yeah,
I actually,
and I think there is something about
and
him.
I actually saw enough from him in that City game. I saw some very intelligent running. Brian Owen in the Argus this week. He's basically said that his pre-season, you know, he had, in the game away at Wimbledon pre-season, that he had got himself into some very, very good positions, but he just did not take those chances. And I think he is a confidence player. I think that, you know, if he does bide his time, his time will come. But he's better playing as a two. When the times when we've seen him at his best, he was playing alongside Leo Ojoa. Admittedly, it was against Coventry. But also coming on as a two, playing alongside Glenn Murray.
There's an absolute
really well.
Parallel between him, in my opinion. There's an absolute parallel between him and Mikhail Smith, in one sense, is that he has been shoved up front, playing in a lone role, to hold the ball up, which is not
when
his
that's
game
not
at
his
all.
Game.
Exactly.
Exactly the same as Mikhail Smith. Yeah. Mikhail Smith was best. The reason, I mean, the injuries and all beside, when he was his best, when he did all those goals, okay, low division, he was playing alongside Aaron, the other guy, Peterborough, you know the guy, I mean.
McLean,
yeah. You know, and they were a double act, playing alongside each other. That's his, and I think the same goes for I mean, he was playing as a winger in Holland,
well,
remember.
The irony
he's not a number nine.
The irony when we signed CMS, the perfect foil to him would have been the guy
Glenn
that
Murray.
Just went up the road.
Yeah,
who would have been...
When he played alongside Ojoa, it wasn't. He, you know, Mikhail Smith was stuck out wide. And, you know, we were talking earlier, just before we came on air, about, you know, Ojoa's great last-minute header. It was Mikhail Smith... that planted an absolute worldie of a cross on his head. And they would have been sort of perfect together. I'm not saying that CMS would have been Premier League quality, you know, but there was something about CMS that, you know, as you say, he's not a lone striker. Likewise, Lacazette is not a lone striker. I believe there is something about him. It's just that I don't think that Houghton's way of playing is necessarily the right way for him.
An interesting one would be to play him alongside, to have Lacazette and Murray playing, you know, playing alongside each other,
but that would obviously mean Andoni as well.
But that would mean, I mean, that would mean disrupting the system.
Yeah.
The interesting thing with Andoni was, and I'd never seen him really. When did he come in against? Well, I wasn't at the Wolves game. Did he?
No, he came against Cardiff.
He came in against Cardiff. I was there, and my one memory of Andoni was that he seemed to be incredibly fast.
Yes, he is.
His cameo was
one of the few positives
in
the game.
Really fast. It was up the other end, and we were playing up the other end, so it's difficult to see in the second half. But he looked like, I mean, he had the beating.
Well, he got totally body checked, didn't he? I think it was him that got absolutely flattened as he was breaking away.
Yeah, I think he should be given the chance now, and I think also that, I mean, Connolly, I saw in the Southampton League Cup game.
It didn't look out of his depth,
and he came on quite late, and he actually looked really sharp. He's really little. He's a completely different sort of player.
Yeah.
I do think he should be given a chance. I think, I mean, it's the kind of thing where, you know, if everything we're always going to do is kind of really, really careful and really, really just sort of trying to squeeze every single possible point we can by the most careful sort of
method
possible.
It's a point we've made on the show before, but because of the difference in quality between the under-23s and now that we're a Premier League side, if we're still in the Championship, then the likes of Connolly and Gyökeres and all the others might have had more of a chance just because the step-up isn't quite as big. It's still big, and we were one of the bigger Championship sides for the last two, three years.
But the under-23s team's doing very well,
but it is doing very well, but the difference between that and the Premier League is going to be an almighty gap. I think you said at the top of the show about Connolly going online. I think he already has been, hasn't he?
No.
Has he not?
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I predicted last season that he was going to be one to possibly get a breakthrough last season. And when we were looking for a striker, when we had John Morling in last season, he was saying that he was definitely in the running for that. And then he himself got injured,
didn't he?
And he didn't actually get his chance. But he's proving it now. I mean, you know,
talking of under-23 players, did you read the interview of George Cox?
Yes.
God, that nearly made me throw up into my breakfast. Wow, when he was told by the surgeon that you're going to, you know, by the way, you're having heart surgery and you might die. You know, talk about a bedside manner that you could, you know, straight out of back to Coldplay Crystal Palace.
But again, this is our medical department detecting these problems.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, it was told that, you know, we found a heart problem, we're going to operate on it. And then the surgeon who performs it said, by the way, you might die. Thanks, mate.
Well, you know, it's a story because he's coming out the other side and he's playing.
Oh, absolutely.
Again, so, you know,
absolutely.
Where is he now?
He's playing for the under-23s and he's back playing again.
Right.
You look at the medical thing and look at Conor Goldson, who's going from strength to strength.
Yeah, well, Goldson did brilliant. Do we know what happened to the Zurich guy we were going to sign? Is he back playing again now?
He's been playing for Zurich.
It's amazingly good that these things are getting detected now.
Absolutely.
In a way that they weren't before.
And the bizarre thing is that, you know, we detected this over what, you know, over what a Swiss club has done. And you associate sort of Swiss medicine with, you know, being amongst the best in the world.
I can tell you that their attitude, I mean, I know a guy who's a big FC Zurich fan, and their attitude was there was absolutely nothing wrong with him.
Oh, right. What
they were saying was, he was saying that the club was saying there was absolutely nothing wrong with him and that we were being far too finickety. And this was a Swiss football club saying that. So very strange.
You cannot take that risk.
You can't take that risk. Of course you can't. Okay.
Okay, well, let's get back to the Cardiff game itself then. And
I thought we covered it.
But one interesting stat was it's a fixture that's now been played in all four divisions.
And there's not that many. I think someone did come up in the NSC with there's only about four or five that's happened to it with.
Yeah. I will say one thing about it, it shows the fine lines and the sort of margins. If the referee hadn't made that awful decision and if the goal had been ruled out for offside as it should have been, then we would have been talking about a brave defensive...
I've still been talking about an appalling lack of being able to retain the ball, games.
No, I was there and I was feeling personally that we'd, you know,
we'd taken
the lead. We were playing a team, you know, we were playing a team, and then we had a couple of chances to increase the lead, which we should have done.
Mm-hmm.
And then Stevens was sent off. And after that, we were playing a careful defensive game, as Houghton would always do in most situations away from home, against a team who were fairly incompetent. And if we'd gone on for four more minutes without that ridiculous goal being given, we'd have got a one-all draw and everyone would have been happy.
Okay.
And it's that kind of thing
under the circumstance, you think, great, a point gained when we've lost, you know. But you think, well, why did we put ourselves in that position in the first place? One, by playing not brilliantly. Because we weren't playing brilliantly before Stevens got sent off. But Stevens rush of blood.
That? It was awful.
Well,
I think AD's going to give it a go. Absolutely ghastly.
Have you seen it since?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I saw it on the pitch and it just looked insane. Yeah.
Okay, well, basically, I mean...
What's your defence?
My defence is that, I mean, basically... He was going for the ball. He won the ball. And he wasn't out of control. The Cardiff player had the opportunity to get out of the way.
His studs weren't high.
His feet are on the ground.
His studs caught just above the ankle.
Basically, he got the ball.
Him getting the ball isn't the issue.
It's one that there were a lot worse challenges that went on in the league. On the very same day.
That's by the by as well. Unpunished. Well, that's by the by. Was that challenge in its own right
yellow card?
Absolutely. Was it excessive force? Yes,
no.
There was. His studs went straight into the bloke's just above his ankle. He didn't have the ball under control.
He'd won the ball, but
that's irrelevant. It's when you go in with excessive force. You can actually get the ball quite handsomely and still get red carded. It's not about winning the ball. The law doesn't actually state that at all, whether you win the ball first. This is one of those things that all these Match of the Day and Sky Sports pundits come up with. There's nothing in the law that says that.
Well, It's about actually him going in with excessive force. I'm going to go with the fact that the ref got every other decision wrong in the game. Liam Rossini says he's saying
this is a fellow who actually broke the same player's leg.
I've got to say that it was
unbelievable. Like every single free kick through the entire game.
They threw themselves over
without exception, a hell of a lot was given to Cardiff.
Yes.
I mean, it was just
every 50-50.
Ridiculous.
Murray went in for a challenge.
It was like just anything that we did, Cardiff got a free kick for.
Yep.
And I mean, that was ridiculous. But I think it was a sending off.
How much did you also look at Stevens' reaction? How much did he protest? Yeah. You look at the club. Did they actually challenge the red card?
You know, it's the kind of thing, and he has done it before. I mean,
I don't count the middle for a game.
I think there was sufficient doubt. There was sufficient doubt.
Anyway, there's no need to go on about that for hours.
But I mean, at the end of the day, the problem is going forwards is we've now lost Stevens for three games. That leaves us with
due back.
Well, he is training
Pascal
again.
Pascal Gross should be back, shouldn't he?
We've got Basuma to cover. We've got Kyle, who thankfully didn't get booked.
And what about this? I mean, Gyökeres looks quite...
He's more of a winger, though. He's kind of more of a forward player.
We seem to have an awful lot of wingers.
Yeah, we seem to sign
lots of wingers.
That's why we don't score, because everyone's playing out wide.
Through the development squad.
We've got Murray up front, and that's it.
I've been told by my friends, Cole said to me, basically, Lukaku is basically a winger.
Right.
And Tony is basically a winger. Johan Batch is basically a winger.
We're
just signing loads of wingers.
Andoni's a number 10.
More wingers than Nando's.
You reckon Andoni's more of a gross
type? Well, if they're all left wingers, I'll be quite happy, to be honest.
Well, hey.
There you go.
Andoni could have come in and played where Solly March has been playing, basically, quite easily.
Well, who did he come on for? Oh, he came on for Murray in the end, because... Murray came off.
And as I say, in that little cameo, he did look...
I thought he looked very lively.
Really,
he was
he
the one
really
bright
sharp.
Spark of the whole day.
He looked really sharp.
What we cannot afford to do, because I still think they're playing very, very well, is we cannot rely on Duffy, Dunk and Ryan to save us week in, week out. Because you saw, and I take Nick Schapanik's point on this, is that, yes, you saw Duffy and Dunk, for the winning goal, throw themselves mercilessly at the ball, trying to actually keep it out. You know, it hit Dunk and it hit the crossbar. And then you see the follow-ups and what have you. And Montoya was on his toes for Sol Bamba's follow-up to lash it into the net. And you saw Bong standing around picking his nose. And it's not... Yeah, all right, it was a little bit pinball. Yes, there was a moody offside. Not the first one, the second one, yes. But the point is, you should still thrash it into Rose Ed. it's the fact that we were down to 10 is not the point. We played Sheffield Wednesday in our championship game, and I don't see Cardiff as being much more than a decent championship side rather than certainly a poor Premier League side. We played Sheffield Wednesday, beat them with 10 men after Murray got sent off for the ball, you know, missing his beautiful face and hitting him in the hand instead. And we still managed to beat Sheffield Wednesday. We know how to play teams with 10 men, especially mediocre teams. And we were poor on the ball.
I thought we did all right until that moment. I mean,
we defended fine mostly, but I mean, it's when we get the ball.
I suppose that's one of the interesting things now. When you've seen as many away games in the Premier League with the Albion now as I have, you just get used to us just defending all the time. And if as long as we do that
and against
well,
Cardiff, it drives you around the space. They're rubbish. Come on.
It's like
all you have to do is put your plimsolls on and they'll be fine. Yeah. I mean, we could play, you know.
Then we get onto the ghosts of Mike Bamber thing, you know. Sorry, not Mike Bamber. What I'm talking about, Mike Bailey. Sorry.
Bamber.
We get to the. I'm getting confused between Mike Bamber and Sol Bamber. Mike Bailey. It's Mike Bailey. We get it's the Mike Bailey thing. I mean, yes. I still am quite happy. I think Houghton is a tremendous tactician, a very intelligent man with really good values on and off the pitch. I'm not going to criticise him in the slightest. It is not always fun to watch in the way that we like watching our football.
No.
But I think that is partly due to something we drew attention to earlier on, which is the ridiculous sort of one-sidedness now of the Premier League and the fact that much of the time we are going to be doing damage limitation away from us.
Well, I still think you've got to pick your battles. I mean, there's no point going and playing offensive football at Man City because
you can at Cardiff.
Or Liverpool, but you can't. But against teams like Cardiff.
Teams like Brighton. Yeah.
You sounded like an Everton fan, like a West Ham fan now, mate.
No, that's not good. Teams like Brighton, teams like Cardiff. No.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying in that traditional sense, but basically we should be going to places that are our competitors in that particular
sense. Absolutely.
And actually not being so negative tactically.
When you consider the top six, okay, fine, you have to write them off a little bit, although we have beaten Man U, we beat Arsenal, well, we beat Man U twice. Then you've got this kind of hinterland, you've got Everton and maybe a couple of others who are, you know, are pretty good. But then after that, there's not a massive difference between, you know, the bottom 10, 12 teams, of which Brighton are one of those. And therefore, on any given day, we're back to almost like this mini championship where everyone is beatable. And that includes playing at home to Cardiff, away at Fulham, at home to Palace, away at Southampton. These are the games where we are not their inferior. We're not the newbies anymore. And
it should be a level playing field.
This is the question that we
discussed already, I think. And when you came on this little thing that I've been doing for Latest TV, which is how long? I'm older than you, but are we all going to be happy celebrating every year, finishing 16th in the Premier League for the rest of our lives? Very soon, I think we've got to go for it. I mean, I think either we go for it generally, or at the very least, we put the first team out in the League Cup and the FA Cup, and we really go for the cup competition.
I think improvements, though, will be incremental, and they have to be. And we're talking about probably over 3-4 years, and by which time, if those incremental changes are made, those improvements are made, then in 4 years' time, we'll look back on where we are now and say, well, there's no way we can go back to that because that would be a massive regression. But in the meantime, there has to be a level of patience.
We're doing fine.
Absolutely.
We're doing absolutely fine at the moment, and I agree with you. I think it is incremental. At the moment, I'm very happy with what's going on,
mm-hmm.
To be not in the bottom three, to be miles above the bottom three at this stage in the season, especially given our early sort of matches against quite a lot of the top teams,
yep.
We're doing fine.
Yeah.
We're doing absolutely fine. As long as this continues more or less, then we're fine. But at some point, it'll be lovely to see a more attacking style of football.
Well, I believe you're right. I mean, I've been talking quite a lot about 1983 recently, and the fact that, you know, getting to that FA Cup final, that was in 1983. That was a massive achievement for us.
Yes,
and
look at the price, though.
But it was for teams on Brighton's level. I mean, you could for the mid tier teams down. I mean, you're job as a football club is to try and be as successful as possible, to try and win as much stuff as possible.
As entertaining as possible.
So, and I don't see why we can't take these competitions a little bit more seriously and actually go out there and try. I mean, well, to be honest, we got to the FA Cup quarterfinals last year for the first time since 1986, so that is a progression for us.
Mm-hmm. And let's hope we, Palace on the way. Yeah,
but let's hope we can carry on that progression. And, you know, I mean, I would love to get to an FA Cup final or a League Cup final.
You know what's going to happen, though, now you've asked that. We're going to get Man City away in the third round.
Oh, the sad thing at the with the Southampton game in the League Cup was that, the game was going to be 0-0 until they brought on Redmond and Austin.
Yeah.
And I think we should have... there's the classic example with Lacardia. I was really looking forward to seeing Lacardia playing a full game in his proper role, and he was frankly appalling.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that we have to bear in mind. I mean, one of the reasons I went to that game... the main reason I went to that game, apart from obviously to support the Albion, was because I knew that we'll be watching a lot of the players who don't normally get the chance to play. And I knew that Lacardi was well fed up because he hadn't had the opportunities because Murray had been playing so well. And he was really rubbish. I mean, he
wasn't good.
There was a couple of the others who looked good. So
Guy Cory's was good that
Guy Cory's was good. Connolly looked threatening when he came on. I can't really remember.
Bissouma was outstanding in that game.
The others were under-23s were defenders who looked very, very competent.
Bissouma was great as well. And Bissouma is going to be a really good player for us. Mm-hmm. That is one that is a really good signing. Yeah. I mean, once he's really settled in and he's got more bit used to things and got a bit older... more experience in English football, I think he's going to be
21, 22, something like that.
It could be fine.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com, and I've got an absolute doozy of a shirt of the week coming up for you here. I'm just going to pass this over to John while he's adjusting his eyes to that. Okay. Of course, we have got a live show coming up on the 12th of December at Brighton's Rialto Theatre. It's an evening with Chris Catlin and Andy Rollins, and it's going to be, if any one of you have been to any of our live shows before, you know what they're like. It's a lot of fun.
It's a hoot.
And Phil from oldfootballshirts.com, he hasn't actually confirmed he's actually doing this, but you are, Phil. You will be doing a live shirt of the week for me to get my tongue tied over, and I am definitely going to get tongue tied over this one.
Okay, John, could you describe what AD has just handed you there?
Well, No.
Yes,
I can. It's got black. It's got red sleeves. It's got a sort of blackish kind of main front. It's got feeler with a red red motif with a football in the middle, and it's got and with a sort of a yellow sort of trim around the front, and it has in the middle Özilisk, which is 100% Turkish. I'm certain of that, and I would say this is an old. I'm just going to think, be really careful about this because it's like Brighton and Crystal Palace or Spurs and Arsenal. And I'm thinking Fenerbahce or Galatasaray. I'm thinking it's probably Fenerbahce.
Is it a Turkish side?
It is a Turkish side.
In that case, the fact that you actually haven't confirmed it, I'm just going to pick one of the others and say Trabzonspor. And if it's not them either, then it's going to be some really obscure second division side that plays on a dirt bowl just outside their main town.
They are actually in the Turkish Super League.
Okay, who has Phil given us this as this shirt of the week this week?
He says, this is your shirt of the week, and it's a colourful number. This is the Göztepe SK away shirt from 2001 to 2002. They are nicknamed Gürzgürz, and they play in the Turkish Super League, where they currently sit in mid-table. Home is a 12,500 capacity Bornova, as is Kocaglu Stadium. It's Stady here, built in 2013 and shared with Altınordu Futbol Kulübü of the Turkish Championship.
He's a bit ropey on his Turkish, John. Yeah.
My Turkish. Sorry.
But there's actually a very simple way to really determine that this is Turkish, because you've got the first four letters of the sponsor, whatever it is
Özil,
O-Z-I-L, with the umlaut on the O. And I'm sure many people are aware that although Mesut Özil is a player for Germany,
he's of Turkish descent.
Turkish descent, in the same way that most of the Swiss team are Albanian. In fact, I think all of them are Albanian, actually.
Anyway, what else has Phil said?
Okay, their greatest success is regarded as when they won the Turkish League in 1950. In 2003, they were banned from signing players after financial irregularities, and there followed five relegations in the following five seasons. The club was bought at an auction in 2007 by the Altınbas group of companies, and the owner of whom promised to get the side back in the top flight, and in June 2016 they succeeded. The Guinness Book of Records shows the match between Göztepe and Karinka is the biggest non-top flight attendance ever, when a crowd of 80,000 watched the match in 1981. Some British links for you. Former West Ham, Newcastle and Chelsea striker Denver Barr played for the side earlier this year. Former Norwich, Cardiff, Derby and Middlesbrough Birmingham and Stoke striker Cameron Jerome joined the side at the beginning of this season. So there you go. Right.
I'm also noticing, actually, within the badge, and it's kind of a shield with four quarters and the football in the middle of that, there's the top left-hand one is red and white checks. So I'm just wondering if there's some kind of Croatian link there as well. Has he mentioned that at all?
None.
Okay. All right. Well, there might be. Well,
there we go.
Okay. Thanks for that, Phil. And if you want to go and see any one of, nearly 95,000 shirts on his online gallery, just go to oldfootballshirts.com. Thanks very much indeed for your continued support, Phil.
Absolutely. And of course, like as I mentioned there, you can get your tickets for our show at Rialto on the 12th of December. Where can you get those out?
You can go to rialto.co.uk, rialtotheatre.co.uk, and look for the Albion Raw page, the link there, and follow the link from there. Tickets are £8 and £6 for concessions. Doors will open at about 6:30. There's a very good bar there serving very good beer, and I think they'll stay open until about 1:30 if we're not going to get too drunk. But so the Wednesday, 12th of December, an evening with Rollo and Kat. Hear many tales from the 70s and 80s, including your favourite.
Mm, yeah, sure. And John, I mean, you're old enough to have seen Rollo and Kat play together, of course.
Yes, indeed. Rollins played, I think Cross.
Graham Cross.
Graham Cross was his partner in centre half when he was playing. Catlin was a very good unusually quiet. He was a good fullback.
You're actually looking thoughtful and ponderous, John. Who knew that? I've never seen this before. You got
it's
mellow.
I'm trying to hold back a bit now. I mean, I started off in old school mode, but I mean this this thing that you came on the first one of that I'm doing for Latest TV, which is now actually it's into its fourth. The fourth one is actually going to be recorded next Monday.
And who is? Do point. Tell.
Paul Camerlin is coming the next one.
Okay. So
I did you two for the first one.
Yep.
And it's all a little tiny explanation of how this all came about. But I've known Bill Smith from Latest TV for years. I've always been aware of Latest TV. Basically, what I've been aware of is that they've got a lot of good kit, and sometimes they're a bit disorganised, and some of their programmes, the quality control isn't terribly fantastic. But I did realise that at their best, with the good kit that they've got, you could actually do something really good. And I did a couple of football bits for him last season, which hardly anyone saw.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, all this good kit, what we could do with that is do a really good film of my band to complement the album that's just come out. So I suggested to him, he'd been wanting me to do an Albion thing for ages. So I said to Bill Smith, okay, you give me a really good live film of my band in concert at the Lakes Music Bar, and I will do a programme for you where I interview people from our culture at Brighton. And that's what we've done. It's a kind of a quid pro quo sort of thing. We got a fantastic video for the band, which is up on YouTube, Barnstorm 1649, to the stockbroker, if anyone's interested. And I'm doing this very, very low-key, deliberately really low-key show where I'm learning how to be a TV presenter, which obviously for me is quite difficult because I talk all the time.
So,
in the first show, I talked. There was two of you, and you talk a lot. And I'd even given you two,
you
I still managed
smashed
to talk.
Us.
I still managed to talk too much.
In the second I can tell you show, less is more.
in the second show with Sambra, Paul Sambra, who is lovely, incisive. Obviously, we go back years. I was a lot more relaxed. And although I started off talking too much, I let him really go for it and said all the really important good things he had to say. And by the end, I was really quite pleased. The third show, I got it right with Dan Tester.
Okay.
I let Dan be Dan and talk about what he was doing and talk about what he had been doing. And I got it right.
Right.
I'm pleased about that, because basically for me, it was simply a question of learning how not to talk all the time and let other people get a word in edgeways.
It's nice to be guinea pigs, isn't it? You
know, yeah, I know.
And so I've got, obviously, I know.
Have us back on when you've learned how to do it properly. Then.
We all know the people and we all know the history.
Who else?
And it's just a question of just getting it right. And I'm really looking forward to having Paul Campbell in on next Monday.
Absolutely.
Because he's got, from Hereford to here, even more than for me, that sums him up, because he was one of the most dedicated and totally out there activists and angriest of activists in the worst of times against Archie Blotty and Stanley.
Yeah,
and now he's the club's press officer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the ultimate,
ultimate 180, isn't it? Yeah.
But it's not a 180. I mean, it's not poacher term gamekeeper, because he wasn't a poacher and he's not a gamekeeper.
He was a very naughty boy.
He's doing his thing.
Absolutely.
And I respect him. I mean, we don't always agree about everything.
So who have you got lined up for future shows after this?
It's a desperately difficult thing to do, to be what he's doing now, and I totally get it, and I respect him for it. Well, I'm going to get Dick Knight on, absolutely.
Oh,
I've asked Dick's going to come on, I'm sure, at some point. I haven't asked him yet, but I'm sure he will. And then it'll be like a rap battle. No, what I mean is, it's like a rap battle in the sense that me and Dick meet up occasionally for a meal or a coffee or whatever, and it's like, who gets the word? It's like a boxing match with words, because you know what he's like, you know what I'm like. It's like, and then there's someone has to take a breath, and everyone comes.
It's like a poetry jam.
Yeah, it's like, yeah,
slam.
So it's like, I asked the NSK, I asked North Stand Collective to come on, but I didn't want to.
Even anonymously.
Have they got the kit to blank out their faces?
I asked Tony. It's up to them. I mean, I've got two basic targets to come up soon. Which one is, I want to get someone who's not male on, and second is to get somebody who's under 30. So we'll see how we go with that.
Do you know any of the following? The previous.
I
know loads. Yeah. It's just a question of people wanting to do it.
Well, actually, let's throw that out there. Actually, if you are female and or under 30 and fancy having a natter with John on TV, and you have your own story.
I'm going to ask Liz Costa for definite at some point. Absolutely, obviously.
But if you have your own story, I mean, because everyone has their own story. I mean, if you were part of the war years, then there's a good chance you're over 40 nowadays. Yeah. But if you're under 30 these days, and your Albion experience is your own Albion experience, then let us know. We'll put you in touch with John, and we can.
No, what I really want, I mean, because I, you know. I mean, I only talk, to be fair, I only talk to a couple of the NSK. If there's anybody from the NSK, from brightonfans.com, any of the new, any sort of the people who've come recently, people half my age or less, who maybe don't remember the war years, but have got some understanding, we've got the basic understanding of the stuff that matters, and just about everybody who actually really cares about the club has got that understanding. We all know that. If you want to get in touch, you can just email me on attilathestockbroker.com or find me, because I'm all over the internet anyway, and just get in touch and come on the show. But as I say, I've deliberately kept it really low key. It's not promoted through North Stand Chat. It's not promoted through all our stuff. We just do it. I just do it as a really low key thing at the moment, because I'm learning how to do it. And
great stuff. Nice one.
Okay, moving on then. So in Albion history, Thursday the 15th of November 2018 is going to go down in the history in time as the time
as a letter day, one of our own.
He is.
Yeah, I know, absolutely.
One of our own. It's we've seen the rise. I mean, all right. He went to Varndean, but you know, we've seen the rise that of Lewis Dunk, or Tommy Elphick, as you called him the first time you saw him play.
I may have been drinking.
You couldn't tell. But no, it's we've all witnessed it from very first to where he's at now, and you know there's still further to go. You know, we want to see him playing in competitive international matches. We want to see, you know, if he can captain his country one day. But it's superb, thoroughly deserved, and it's not as though Southgate is actually giving out caps willy nilly. Yes, this would have been the perfect game to do it, and so it proved. And those who watched the game realised that basically he got the cigars out. A nitpicker might actually point out that yeah, he made one mistake, but hey, which footballer has ever, you know, even the man of the match, I thought, wasn't my man of the match. So, you know, anyone can nitpick, but I thought
who do you think man of the match was?
Well, it's not mine, but the one that was picked was, what's his name, Terence Trent D'Arby. And I thought...
Sancho?
No, the right back. Terence Trent Alexander, whatever his name is.
Yeah, no, but I mean...
I thought Sancho looked sort of like he was a tricky customer who was great. No, it was, and I thought Callum Wilson did really, really well. But you know, I think it was a fairly good, easy game for Lewis Dunk to be broken into.
How do we feel about the Wayne Rooney situation in this game?
I'm fine with that. And to be honest, actually, having watched some of his highlights at DC United, and admittedly playing in the MLS, which isn't the highest quality, but he really was rolling back the years last night. And
yeah, he looked great when he came on. Actually.
You could see that the Manchester United times, you know, had really sort of done for him. And no, he wasn't the player. And any other point, he went to Everton and he wasn't that sort of player either. But yeah, all right, there was a touch of he was the centre stage and he was going to be able to excel in that. But yeah, he really was rolling back the years. And I thought it was great to watch him. And so I've got no problem with it. If anyone wants to say, oh, you know, what's the point of just handing out cash? No, this is a fellow who's actually earned his stage bow.
Yeah. John?
I mean, I'm incredibly pleased for Dunk. I mean, years ago, for years now, I've thought he'll play for England one day. It's like, you know, and it's happened. I mean, we said the same. I said the same about Zamora, and it happened, but in a different way because Bobby didn't maybe get quite as high as we thought he would do. But I think that Lewis Dunk is going to, you know, in a few years, will be probably the best. Will be recognised as the best. Defender that we have in, you know, England qualified defender that we have. I mean, I think he's fantastic. I think he's doing really, really, really well. He's playing brilliantly alongside Duffy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a great moment of great pride for the Albion. And the fact that we've managed to produce such a player, and most importantly of all, that he has chosen to stay with us. I mean, hats off to the guy.
Mm.
And he, you know, he's obviously had opportunities to go elsewhere. And he's stayed with us, which is really refreshing. I mean, I'd like to see him be the next Matt Letizia and commit his entire career to Brighton of Albion.
Do you think that will happen?
It's conceivable. I mean, he obviously does feel has a huge affinity for the area from where he's from. And to be blunt, if he goes to a big club, he won't
be a bench warmer, won't he?
Football all the time. And it's really a question of what you want in your life. If it's just money, then he will go. If it's the satisfaction of playing for your hometown team and being recognised as I think very soon we will be saying the greatest player we've ever had, then that's up to him.
Wow.
That's up to him.
Absolutely. No, it's exciting times. And you've got a bunch of stats for Lewis's England appearance, haven't you? You were saying that so every single Brighton player that's played for England,
yes,
has been a clean sheet,
yes,
which is an impressive stat. We know that Lewis is the oldest Brighton player ever to play for England.
All the others were 24, yeah, and Lewis is 26.
So. Yeah, he's not the first Brightonian to play for England. There was a couple of fellas back in the 1880s, but I can't remember their names. He's the first Sussex-born player to play for England since Gareth Barry.
There's just one thing I'd like to say about that. I think it's an absolute tragedy that we got rid of Conor Goldson, because I think Conor Goldson is going to play for England one day as well. And I think having Goldson and Dunk as our ball-playing centre-halves, we could have transformed the whole idea, the whole concept of how you play in defence in the Premier League. But that's not to be.
Yeah. I thought that it was impossible for someone else to love Conor Goldson more than I do, but it's quite evident that you do, and no, I totally agree.
I think he will play.
You know, he's a great player. It's just a tragedy. It's not for us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the problem is, I mean, He had the heart problem, and we signed Shane Duffy at that point.
Absolutely.
Duffy at the moment is probably my player of the season.
It had to happen. I mean, there's no way that it couldn't happen because Goldson is such a good player, and Duffy is doing so well. It's just we've had this problem before. We had it with Elphick and Cook and all the rest of it. Mm. I wish we had this problem at centre forward, not centre half. We seem to produce loads of great defenders and absolutely no wonderful strikers.
Well, it looks like Connolly could be the first striker. We've produced since
Joe Gatting.
Can I just do my new chant for Glenn Murray for those of us old enough to remember a sweet hit from 1971? And it's so funny what you do, Murray, worry what you do, what you mean to me.
It's still nowhere as good as the Prince Charming one.
No, we prefer our Prince Charming one, Glenn Murray be happy, you know. So. No, we're not going to recreate the drunken thing that because when we had Graham Rolfe in a couple of weeks ago, we were in the hand in hand afterwards, and we were just giggling like three schoolboys in the corner with all our silly. No, it was just, that is lost to posterity forever.
Okay, and moving on from that, Al, we have actually got some sad news.
Yeah, received an email last week from the Eaton family. Sad to say that Laura Eaton, Robert Eaton's mother, passed away surrounded by her family. She'd been ill for quite a while, although the family did say that her decline was fairly sort of rapid in the end. Laura, for my part, I met her several times, especially at Lewis for each of the Renfrew matches. The clear of sort of a red letter day in her life was the 11th of September 2001. She lost her son. But I know that she was incredibly proud and incredibly pleased that a charity which took her son's name has made a difference to so many children locally and internationally. In the face of, you know, such overwhelming grief, that something sort of positive can come from it. I know she was very proud. She was a very keen supporter of the charity. It was always fabulous to see her and Doug every year at Lewis. She would come along and sort of like grab me by the arm and whisper something conspiratorially to me, even if it was just to have a glass of white wine. Always there, always very pleased, always very proud. And the last time I saw her, I think, was earlier this year. Bless her, she bought us all supper at Brett's place at the Caxton after a meeting we had there. Still talking very proudly of what the future of the charity was holding. So to Laura Eaton, thank you very much indeed for your support. You will be much missed, and may your kind soul rest in peace.
And of course, the charity lives on, and there's lots of news coming up very soon.
There's stuff coming up. We're just in the throes. We've got the date sorted for the next year's Robert E. Memorial Fund quiz night. We'll be telling you more about that in the coming weeks. There's a good chance we'll have a change of venue for the Renfrew match, but that's still in conversation at the moment, and we'll let you know what's happening with that. Next year, we'll be talking about all the things that we're going to be doing Renfrew-wise and much more.
And that's all after Christmas. But absolutely, before Christmas, there's something happening at Rialto on the 12th of December. Al,
there is.
Have we mentioned that already?
Who knew? Who knows? I mean, this is where it ties in quite nicely with the previous England player, Brighton player playing for England, Steve Foster, who ran this nightclub called Fozzie's, which is at the bottom of Dyke Road, nowadays called the Rialto Theatre. And on the 12th of December, we're taking it over live on stage. You, me, Andy Rollings, Chris Catlin, who has never owned a racehorse, by the way, for those who are wondering, will be hosting an Albion Roar in front of a live studio audience. There'll be lots of beer, lots of chatting, lots of fun, lots of giggles, lots of reminiscences.
And Chris Catlin, my favourite Albion manager of all time.
Absolutely. Actually, then, OK, guns ahead. John, very quickly, before we close the show, your favourite all-time manager for the Albion. Is it the current incumbent?
Without any doubt at all, by a light year, by a million light years, Chris Hughton.
Thanks for that.
Al?
Probably not quite so far, but yeah, he has now overtaken Alan Murray for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, I wasn't really around for Muller's part one because I was too young. Part two was almost as bad as Mickey Adams' part two.
Well, not quite. And, but that was just in the middle of a load of old politics. That
but
was.
Chris Catlin, he just the players that he signed as well. I mean, that team was such a wonderful time to be there.
But for having better support, and we can hear all about that on the Rialto on the 12th of December.
Second for me was the first time of Mickey Adams.
Sure.
Who was inspirational and a really, really nice bloke as well.
And speaking of inspirational, so are you, John. Thank you very much for coming in again. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Pack, and we'll be back next Saturday before the Leicester game.
Indeed we will.
This has been The Album Rule. Thanks for listening. See you again. Bye. Tell me, is it really true? This feeling that I feel for you. Your own kind of loving that makes me think nothing could ever take the place of you. And it's so funny, funny what you do. Honey, honey, what you do, what you mean to me. You can't.